All right, welcome back to Just Another Solar Podcast with Luke Beattie. That's me, Carl Jensen. G'day, Carl.
That's me. We've actually had some sunshine today in Victoria for the first time in a long time.
And Nigel Morris.
G'day, fellas. Hey, good to be here, as always.
This is where you were supposed to say, Luke. It was 45 degrees in Perth yesterday.
It was 45 degrees yesterday and 42 today. So
crazy. That is crazy.
All right, so we've got a lot to get through today and a really great guest. Nigel, it seems that we've got another deadline, another crisis. We want to outgrow this as an industry, but we've got another huge one.
We sure do, yeah. In fact, it seems like this week's deadline week. Everything's come to the fore. So the big one, of course, is the change in the standards requirement for PV modules. This has been coming for a long time. Any PV manufacturer worth their salt would have known about this potentially over a year ago, I suspect. And what it simply means is that Standards Australia, and I'm going to correct and pull up a few people on Facebook who've jumped the gun and quickly blamed the CEC for this. It's nothing to do with the CEC. They're just the administrator of the program currently. We'll come back to that. But it is a Standards Australia change. And Standards Australia now will require all solar panels by October the 1st to comply with the new standard, or they won't be able to be sold and they'll be delisted. Now, we've been through this a couple of times before, but of course, it's always a mad rush to the finish, and it means that stock has to be cleared. It means that all the testing labs get rushed on, means that whoever is responsible for product approvals has a whole lot of admin to do. And so it's blown up on Facebook today, which is great. You were all over it, Luke, which was great. You rang me in.
Well, it was brought to my attention. I told you, but it was a conversation with Liam Ricketts, and he brought it to my attention because Andrew Thompson at Supply Partners and from the Solar Coaster podcast was all across it.
Yep.
And we fleshed it out, and you go, wait a second. I spoke to half a dozen manufacturers, and they all said we're struggling to actually get the testing done until March, April. Because Torv is backed up and they're still trying to work out what the testing looks like. So if that
happens every time, they're
surprised with this, given that, we've got a handful of basically new modules. 440s haven't been around for that long. Longi's only just brought their Pymo 7 to market. Surely they've tested it to the current standards.
But needs to say so on the label. And according to what's been listed by Standards Australia and therefore the CEC, the compliance label on the panel must say it's to the IEC 61215 2021. Now, I went for a walk in the warehouse. They're pretty much all 2016.
Yep.
So what we're not going to see the panels with those correct labels until April, May. That's going to leave us 6 months or less to basically turn over all the inventory in the country. For decent manufacturers and wholesalers, you cross fingers and hope that's the case. It's not a bad thing to clear out house. But as we know, there's going to be a new accreditation body for products, or it may be the same one, but we're waiting till late this month to find out who it is. So we may end up with a new products accreditation body
right in the middle of a
rush to get testing done, to get the accreditation done. And then after that, we need to flip over all the stock in the country. So it seems that the 1st of October is not really going to be achievable unless we want to see a collapse in the price of panels, panic selling, and basically disruption top to bottom in the industry.
Business as usual.
Yeah, look, maybe the industry needs, 20 centawatt panels right now, because what I'm being told out there on the field is that everyone is fast approaching the end of their back order book and phone's not ringing.
Ooh, really?
Oh, yeah. A number of people have approached me this week. Hey, we're going to do a big push on iStore because there's nothing going on in PV land, got nothing for the guys to do. And obviously, we're still paying people wages and such. So we've got to get something happening.
I had a lot of people say January was pretty slow, and certainly a lot of people I knew took a long January break. So I reckon February the market's going to go ballistic. And if there are people out there who've been slow as well, then they're going to be pushing the marketing hard as well. So I reckon things are really going to ramp up in Feb.
Already in Feb, Nigel.
Yes, well, you're quite true.
Coming back to the panel issue, though, do you think that one way to resolve it would be that if panels are tested to the 2021 and there's still older stock in the country, that should be able to be installed?
Yeah, look, and full disclosure, I'm on the CEC product approval panel as an industry rep, been on that role for many, many years. And when these kinds of issues come up, we get dragged in and asked an opinion or two, and I'm never short on an opinion. And, you know, I'm all for being realistic about this stuff. And if there's a way to, you know, simply certify that this panel is exactly the same and it's made with the same recipe and the same materials and on the same line and everything else, and all I've had to do is go through a test that shows that it meets the new standard, but it's the same bloody panel, then let's be realistic about this. Now, the reality is, of course, that there are some real challenges around logistics and around proving that. And the product approval bodies have to kind of cater for the fact that there are thieves and liars in the world. So, you know, we have to kind of work on the lowest denominator. So I'm all for, I will be batting for it, man. I think, you know, making this as practical and simple as possible and minimizing the pain, minimizing the disruption, allowing old stock to be covered under potentially new a new sticker. If the difference is only the sticker and the testing that it's been approved to, but the recipe's the same, then bloody hell, let's get realistic about it. Whether we can get that through or not, in the current world, that's a discussion I'm actually going to have with the product approval panel as a consequence of you raising it with me. I took it as your rep and raised it with the committee, and we're meeting next week to have a discussion about it. But, of course, whether I'm out of a job in a few weeks is another matter. So, you know, then it'll be up to someone else to make those kinds of decisions. But sounds like a good idea to me.
Interesting, Nigel. The refrigeration industry is going through something similar. And 1st of July, R410A, R134A, a handful of other refrigerants with high global warming potential will no longer be able to be imported into Australia. But anything that's brought in prior to that date can still be installed. So anything that's at your electrical wholesalers and so on and so forth can still be installed. That seems like a far more practical approach. So you can't import stuff that isn't from this date.
Yep.
Simple.
Simple.
And now moving on. So in Victoria, the emergency backstop has been legislated, Nigel.
Yeah, legislation was passed. The Gazette came out. I was the boss sent it to me this morning and said, here you go. Things are continuing on the solar coaster. So from July 1, all inverters, all systems under 200 kVA, so basically the entire residential market, is going to need to comply. Similar rules and regs to what we've seen in Queensland and in WA. I actually couldn't make out what the technology, it looked a bit vague to me about what the tech is. Like, I don't think it's a device as such, like they have in Queensland, like they're forced to install in Queensland. I think it's more like the WA approach or the South Australian approach, where they're just saying, look, as long as you can connect under the CIP standard, I think it is, the CIP inverter standard, as long as you can connect, as long as you can demonstrate that your systems will do what they need to do. Just for clarification, this is only to be triggered by AEMO in an emergency situation. You know,
that's
one of those
different to the other states where it's the DNSP who's pulling the trigger, right?
Or the DNSP or the retailer takes the trigger from AEMO as the national regulator. So with the exception of WA, because you're special over there. But yeah, it's about national, you know, management and orchestration of the network, and it's AEMO who ultimately have the say. So I don't think it's a big drama, but it is certainly going to have some implications, and people are going to need to get their head around it. You got till July, so there's time. And what I do like is that it aligns us. That's now 1, 2, 3, 4 states. You know, get on with it, New South Wales, ACT, I say, let's get a national. And I also raise the issue that, of course, I view this as a prelude to dynamic control. We know Queensland's got dynamic control coming. South Australia's already got some dynamic control going. We know Victoria's already done dynamic control testing and pilot trials. So I would expect dynamic control to follow, you know, maybe next year.
Yeah, it's interesting, Nigel. I did a little bit of analysis of my own data, and my system did 28 megawatt hours last year. And if I trimmed my inverter capacity from 20 kilowatts to 10 kilowatts, I'd only lose 4 megawatt hours of production, which realistically, I've been saying this since day dot, we should be having arrays that are much bigger than the inverters. We allow for winter, and we don't end up with these network problems in the first place, because we just don't have the capacity to be pushing mobs and mobs of power out of the grid. But here we are.
Here we are. And I have to say, in other good news that's sort of related, sorry, Luke, I didn't even put this on my list, but I did see a story the other day that Queensland announced that they had been turning air conditioners off. on six different occasions over the last month and a half, they have been dialing back, actually reducing by 50% air conditioners. And I have to say, I was actually really bloody, I did a little jump for joy, because for the first time, there was this material chunk of consumer load being, you know, managed to help keep the grid under control rather than just always slamming that responsibility on solar. And so it's really, really good to see, you know, this happening in anger. There was a survey done, which I think resulted in something like, you know, 85% of consumers were unaware that the inverter had been dialed back by 50% for the 2 hours or so that they did it. So it doesn't materially impact in any way on consumers, but has a huge impact. 170,000 air conditioners being dialed back by 50%, you know, can keep the lights on. So, you know, full power finally to the DNSPs in Queensland, NG Queensland, I guess it is, for getting that up and running and releasing some results. I'd like to see some results like that from the other states where they're attacking the load rather than the good people of solar.
You're making me feel really bad there, Nigel. There was lots of rolling cloud coming through today. And because my retailer has free energy from 11 till 2, as the cloud goes by, I'm ramping up the EV charger to 11 kilowatts. And then as the sun comes out, I'm getting 20 kilowatts of output out of the solar. I'm ramping back the EV charger. So I'm doing my best to give it to the man.
We know how they're managing it in WA. They're sending text messages. So we had a 45-degree day yesterday, and I got this text message from Synergy, the retailer, and it says, consistent hot weather increases electricity use between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. To save energy, switch off unnecessary appliances. And we've been getting these on the expected peak days.
Yeah, look, there's a whole – this is the future that we're going to live in, right, where we have to orchestrate load and solar a lot more actively, a lot more dynamically. Carl, you're an outlier. You're just a freaking weirdo with your whole setup at home in your car and your bloody massive solar system. You're not normal. We all know that. It's a wonderful example of what's possible, but you're not normal. I'm just going
to
put that
funny out. After the podcast tonight, I've got five people coming over to the house to see what an all-electric utopia looks like.
Well, I think we'll move on with our guest. So our guest today is Richard Pedersen, the CEO of Tindo Solar. They've got a very unique story, and I think we'll let Richard get stuck into it with us. But welcome, Richard, to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys, for having me, and Luke, for your introduction there.
Yeah, no worries. So just for those who don't know you, which I'd be surprised if there's anyone or many people in the industry who don't, do you want to give a brief of who you are and what you're up to?
Yeah, thanks very much. So, yeah, Tindo, we've been around for a while now. Actually, I was just working out today. We're actually in our 14th year of making solar panels. So the company started in 2010, but I think we made our first panel in 2011. And so, yeah, we've been doing that for a long time in South Australia, and it's gone through a couple of owners. So the original founders had a vision for making a really high-quality panel that would last a distance, and they really put a lot of effort and focus into that, and that's been a really strong foundation for the business that's seen it through to where it is now. Most people should know, I think, that Glenn Morelli bought the business in 2016, and he's a bit of a legend in the industry and for other reasons, but had a strong interest in Tindo because he worked with them down here in South Australia. And since then, he's been really investing in the business. So we opened a new factory actually in January last year, and which significantly increased our capacity to continue to service the market.
So that's 150 megawatts is the current capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is small on the world scale, but it's I guess it's the biggest one here because it's the only one.
It's 150 megawatts more than anyone else in Australia, Richard. Well done.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you very much. Yeah, so it's been a real journey. I think the company has had some. You mentioned the solar coast a minute ago. Nigel, that's certainly been my experience as well, just in my short time in an industry. Yeah, so it's an exciting place to be at the moment. And I think, as we all know, there's a real push for developing capability in renewable manufacturing in Australia right now.
So I've seen some plans that you're going to expand, or you're going to get a new plant that's 1 gigawatt capacity. Is it a pie in the sky, or is it actually going to happen?
Yeah, where, it need to happen? Where and when, Richard? I heard that too. That was exciting news. Come on.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Look, it's we have really a grand vision for what Australia could do for making renewable products. So, of course, in our remit, that's a solar panel. And I think we are really excited to get on board with the government's vision for that as well. So that we've had a number of governments, including the federal and state government, approach us to think about doing that scale of production. And we've done a lot of work on what that could look like. And we really think it's viable with the right sort of support. It's got to have the right government support. And I mean, it's not hard to figure out what that should look like. If you look across the Pacific in the USA, they've been implementing the Inflation Reduction Act now for 18 months or so. And it's had a huge response from other manufacturers around the world. So much so that there's been a number of announcements recently where some companies are actually just relocating their operations to the States because it's so attractive. So in our case, we believe that that's possible in Australia, absolutely. And I think our vision for the gigawatt factory is that scaling of any kind takes you a long way to being a lot more competitive. So obviously right now, you know, Tindo in the market is a premium product. We position ourselves that way. We design for Australian conditions, and we manufacture a panel that we believe will last the distance and perform very well over time. But given our scale, it's very hard to compete with the average or the low end of the market. So by scaling to a gigawatt, our vision is to hold on to our value proposition, so continue to make really good product, but the scale will give it a more affordable price, that's for sure.
Yeah, we had Dr. Martin Green and Dr. Renata Egan from UNSW on the show only a few episodes ago, actually, and we dug deep into this issue of, you know, what would it take to scale and is it viable and all those kinds of things. And one of the things that they really highlighted that kind of made my brain explode a little bit, actually, was that the proliferation of solar in our grid has driven our energy prices down so low that kind of offsets the higher costs that we've got in Australia now. And they talked about their huge excitement and some of the studies that they've been involved in to get this going. So when's the announcement, mate? What's you got a deadline or come on?
I'll jump in there. So, Richard, we saw, what was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, REC was sold to an Indian company.
Yeah.
And it was around $750 million, and they were making around a gigawatt. I sort of surmised that a gigawatt of manufacturing capacity was probably worth $500 million, and there's a bit of goodwill there. What sort of money are we talking, Richard? How much, what sort of coin does it cost to build a gigawatt factory now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been pretty clear with that in my public comments. So we're estimating about $100 million to establish what we need to do here in Australia. And that's obviously, you know, right now, there's no real supply chain in Australia to speak of. So if you think about what we do, we specialise in advanced manufacturing. So we design and we specifically select materials that we believe will do the best job for the product. And that means we draw product from all around the world. What we really believe in is by establishing a gigawatt capacity in Australia, it will really stimulate the supply chain. So you can imagine straight away we have aluminium manufacturers in Australia and that could service the world with that sort of scale, be able to improve their prices dramatically. You know, backsheet and encapsulant, there's a lot of elements that go into it. We're currently buying our junction boxes from a new supplier from India. And so those elements are definitely achievable in Australia. There's no doubt about that. Some of the really upstream elements like the silicon extraction and other bits and pieces, which we know are very expensive, will take time and money to establish. So I think to establish the whole supply chain is a huge investment in time and money. But what we believe is by establishing the capability increasing the capability in Australia around the module manufacturing will stimulate those other supply chains to invest as well. So it's kind of a pretty good investment at this stage to for our proposition.
Yeah. Good investment, but no date. You're not giving us a date yet.
Well, it might take us to another topic there, but I think there's certainly been public comments from Minister Bowen about having a response to the Inflation Reduction Act. Our position is that Australia definitely needs to have some type of production credit that will assist manufacturers to get on their feet. So to be frank with you, it really largely depends. Our timing is going to depend
on the feds.
What the government decides to do.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. I'm pretty confident that they're going to respond well. And I would say, Nigel, once we get the go ahead, it's a fairly rapid deployment by us. We've just opened our factory a little over a year ago. Our IP is right there. We're match ready to do it. So we're pretty excited by the opportunity.
So nice. The next question is about downstream demand, though, because, you know, the small-scale market in Australia is 3 gig and it's forecast to sit around that. Large-scale is very lumpy. It varies greatly. And certainly, you know, long-term demand in the large-scale space as well. But how do you find that 1 gigawatt? Would it be predominantly Australia? Would you look at export markets? How would you move all of those panels in the event that we get production tax credits, a response to the IRA, and it's viable for you to open the plant?
You're right. A large part of the solution is we export. So we have a very small export element at the moment. That's really hasn't had enough focus on it from us at the moment. But we see other markets as a great potential. So we make a good product, but also, we have a fairly strong indicators and confidence that the American market's very, very attractive for us. We currently have the lowest cost solar market on the planet. And I've said that a couple of times, which means that drives down the cost of everything, whether it's installation costs, to inverter costs, the panel costs, everything that we're doing. We're sort of in a good position to be able to compete in other markets because we are so used to doing it at a low cost or efficiently and sustainably at the same time. So export market's a large part of it. But certainly we have a very tiny impact in the current small scale market. We focused on the rooftop market because it makes sense to with a quality product. But yeah, there's certainly room for growth for us in the domestic market here in Australia. And I think that's a combination of both rooftop, you know, home C&I and household markets. And as you say, the really large scale is very lumpy and usually attracts the lowest cost end of the market as well. So that would still be, you know, challenging to compete in. There's no doubt about that.
I've still got my fingers crossed that Sun Cable, and you're well placed for that. You can just walk them out the front door and put them on the train. You know, at the end of the day, that should soak up several gigawatts of production. If we're making a gigawatt a year, that should keep the project fed with panels for 7 years while they build it.
Yeah absolutely. We can scale. I mean, the other thing too, the wonderful thing about being a module manufacturer is you can actually scale as long as you can get your supply chain sorted out. So, look, I know a guy. If he wants to, I know a guy who has a factory. Happy to chat to our friends that want to do those scale projects. And I think it would be a wonderful thing for Australia. As a matter of fact, it could be really form a really strong foundation to get the industry moving from where it is now. Because, you know, we're one person. It's a real privilege to be able to do it. But, you know, I think that the sensible thing is you've got to create an environment where it's not just one person doing it. It's a competitive environment, and that's just going to drive a better outcome for the industry.
Yeah, well, there was a takeover bid for one of our major energy gentailers that was a couple of weeks ago, and it got voted down by the Australian shareholders that we wanted to keep it here in Australia, and a couple of super funds stuck their hand up and said, you know, you guys want to do renewables, we've got the money. So there's, you know, at the end of the day, this is a money problem, right?
Well, certainly at this point in time, it is. You've got to have a reasonable amount of money to establish and get production going and get yourself to where you need to be fully competitive, that's for sure.
Well, at least it's not like nuclear, Richard, where you can pour money into it for 12 years and not break an atom.
Yeah, that's right.
You can get some results relatively quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I actually, in my conversations with people, if we had a nod tomorrow, we'd be making panels within 18 months at production levels, you know, so... and then it's down to the market, you know, can I move them and get them to the right location? Yeah, we're pretty confident about that.
So we can make the glass in Australia as well. Is that a thing? We bring it in? What's the story?
Yeah, we do have capability to make glass in Australia right now. It's quite limited. And starting an industry off or having a gigawatt scale of production will really stimulate or help investment in that area. I guess the glass for solar panels is fairly specific. You know, it's highly treated, tempered and everything else that we need it to be for it to be durable, which makes it fairly special. So I think, it'll be a question of scale and can we get the volume through a factory that makes it reasonable? And I think, again, your question about, well, will you just be servicing this market? I would say that, you know, when Tindo has our gigawatt factory running, one of our suppliers is Australian making glass, they'd also be supplying that to the overseas market. And that's why, you know, the American action around the Inflation Reduction Act is such a positive thing because it'll stimulate supply, not just investment within their market, but in other markets as well.
So glass is something that's highly energy intensive, right? So if we've got a substantial portion of renewables in order to fire those processes to make glass, then theoretically we should be as competitive as anyone in the world because our energy is cheap.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. Even just the other day, we were just updating our ESG credentials and looking at our carbon footprint to make a solar module is one quarter of the carbon footprint of modules made elsewhere. And that's purely because a couple of things, you know, Tindo has, obviously we have our own solar system on our roof and as much as we possibly can, but we operate in the South Australian market, which has the highest penetration of renewable energy. So you're quite right about that. Not just it's actually getting cheaper, as I think you were saying just a moment ago, but also there are times when we're on 100% renewable and our aim is to completely get to renewable. Because we're on such a highly penetrated market, it's a really strong thing. So I agree with you. I think there's a real opportunity for Australia. Because we have such high penetration at the moment, higher than anywhere else in the world, we are really leading the way. And I think we, with a bit of innovation and investment of money, there definitely needs investment from governments and other things.
You're speaking to people in South Australia there, Richard. People in Queensland are pretty far behind you.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to come and help you out with that as well. I've got a few panels I can send to Queensland. As a matter of fact, we are doing one of the things that I've done as a new CEO. I've been in the chair a bit over a year now, but wanted to make Tindo a lot more accessible for the market. So for a while we've been pretty focused on South Australian market. As you know, we also sell direct in that market, and that's caused a little bit of confusion in the past. But right now our strategy is to really take it as much as I can to the market, make it as accessible as possible to all our partners and people that want to use Tindo. And you know, I believe that's also going to make us over the long run more competitive as well. The more we can sell, the more we can make, and that improves pricing and everything else.
And that has been some of the negative feedback from installers and smaller retailers that I've heard, is that particularly in South Australia, where you know you've been selling direct to market, but also some of the other markets where they say that you've had a direct to market approach and then you go to dealers and then you've been direct to market. You hear different stories around the country. Obviously, yeah. South Australia is your backyard, so that's a different case there. But the rest of the country seems to have a similar opinion that it's oscillated there. So moving forward, what's the strategy going to be?
Good question. So just to cover off why there's been some oscillation, you know, I think when Glenn bought the business, it was really clear that it wasn't it was a matter of survival to actually start doing direct selling in South Australia because the product didn't have enough of a profile. We hadn't been around long enough and there wasn't enough trust in it at the time. So you're right, there has been some oscillation. Our direction is very clear, and that is to build our wholesaler network through our partners, and we're not selling directly at all in those markets. We will continue to do that in South Australia because it's our home and it's still an important part of what we're doing. We actually think that helps us understand our customers as well, like, you know, because we're actually selling the product and putting it in and understand the challenges dealing with customers directly. We believe it makes us a better partner for people that are putting in solar systems as well and wanting to use Tindo solar panels. So our way forward is very much supporting people to be successful in the solar industry with our product, because we really believe in it, and so certainly not competing with them at all. As a matter of fact, we hope, the way I think about it is that our partners will help us grow and we'll help them grow as well.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think it's really important to listen to the market and to make sure that you address those competitive channel issues, because, you know, people listen and watch and see, and, you know, those competitive issues are really real. But I'm going to say one thing in your favor, mate. Having been deep inside Tindo with Solar Analytics, not anymore, sadly, but for many, many years, we were really close partners with you guys. And the amount of time that I personally spent working with your team, analyzing system performance, dealing with customers, dealing with the challenges of installation, using data to actually learn how to make solar better and to install solar better. And they're incredibly, incredibly valuable lessons. And I had the joy and the pleasure of participating in just a tiny bit of that with you guys. So that's a proof point of you talking about the value of being direct in a market. And I think it's really, really valuable and has set the scene for you guys being a really mature player in our market. So I think it's great. I think every dealer and wholesaler out there should have a really close look at you guys.
Yeah, thanks, Nigel. I think it's, that's kind of how I saw it too when I came in. One of the first things I did was is to reach out to our customers, say, can I have some feedback? Got a bit of feedback, you know. So, and I think there are some of the positive things were, we know you're in it, so you know you understand what we're going through and how to help us do better. Like not help us, but you know, just bring our IP to the table, if you like, which is not just in a panel, but also in the business model and how we sell and all those sorts of things. But as well as things like you're difficult to find, you're hard to deal with sometimes, and you know all those things that have been really hard to hear. Yeah, it's resulted in me completely changing our strategy, putting a new team in place so that you've got some guys that have been around for a long time managing our partner relationships. They're in the field, they'll come and see you. We've been absent from the field for a long time. And again, like I say, we are really keen to make sure we maintain our value proposition, which is we're designing products specifically for Australian conditions. We're engineering those in a way that we believe will last a long time and give great performance. But we'll do that with our partners too. So we're always seeking feedback, and I think you know as well, Nigel. We do a lot of work with the University of New South Wales. So Renata Egan has been a wonderful support of ours, University of New South Wales, and any local university where we are as well. So part of the vision for the Gigafactory is it actually stimulates so much innovation around it. So to your point, Nigel, you have to have a broad network of people around you to be successful in business. Full stop. But when you're trying to create new opportunities and ideas as well, you need to have experts in and around you. But
no one's doubting the scale of the task. And basically, you've got to scale a $50 million a year business into a $300 million a year business with an investment of, what you say, $500 million. There's some pretty big numbers there for most people to get their heads around.
It's a big number for me to get my head around too. You need to build, you've got to get other people to get that number in their head too. So, yeah, it's a huge opportunity, but it's also a huge hill to climb as well. Yeah.
You can only eat an elephant, Richard, one mouthful at a time.
It's such a great way to think about it, because some days you look at it and you think, far out, how do I get there? But you're right. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, can we really do it in Australia? And I said, well, if we don't do anything, we're not going to do it. But if we just take one step at a time, and I saw my reference is climbing Mount Everest, we'll look back in 10 years' time, we'll be standing on top of a really thriving industry, you know, with manufacturing of all and things we can't even think of at the moment because they just don't exist. So one thing about this industry is it moves so rapidly, like just in 12 months, the technology moves so rapidly. You'll be talking about a completely different thing in 6 months' time, and then in 10 years' time, it'll be, if we don't do anything, yeah, we're just going to be observing the rest of the world do it. But if we take a step and it takes some courage and hard work, I reckon in 10 years' time, we'll have an incredible industry. It was created. This industry was created in Australia, for crying out loud. It sure was.
And it was, yeah, as I was listening to you speak, it's not the first time it's been done either. You know, I was lucky enough to be with BP Solar when they made mega investments in Australia. And, you know, at one point had 85% market share here, and it is eating an elephant. It is an enormous, enormous task. But it can be done. It's been done before, can be done again. It's just a bit bigger.
Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, Australia is still a technology country. You know, we currently don't have a lot of manufacturing capacity, but we certainly have technological skill, innovation and skills, and university qualifications, all of that sort of stuff. We're educated for who we are. And when you're building modules at those kind of scales, Richard, the vast majority of it's automated anyway. Yeah. Give us the rundown.
Yeah, it's a great question. As a matter of fact, just had some visitors in our factory the other day. You're welcome to come and visit us anytime, by the way. We have an open policy and just very happy to share with people how we do it. But you're right, when you scale and you're doing it with a lot of automation, so for a factory of the scale we're talking about, it's about 250 people that would be employed by it. So it's a massive, it's a wonderful thing for anyone that if we put that development anywhere. At the moment, Tindo is only around 65 people. What happens is as you scale, you still need humans, you just don't need as many because you get as much as you automate. And the types of jobs you're employing people to do are usually more technical and have a higher skill base and all those things. It actually takes us about 2 years to train somebody to become a technician in what we do. So it's not like walking the door and just putting your finger in. You've just got to, there's a lot of knowledge in it and experience. So yeah, I think it's, you know, the automation is really key. So, you know, a lot of large factories overseas are just doing everything they can to automate as much as they can. And that's what we've done. We're using the latest technology right now. So if you come and look at our factory, you'll see the latest automation, level of automation on our line. It's just a small scale.
Yeah. I did find an interest in your partner presentation, the most recent one, that Glenn Morelli actually said that there's some of the automated processes that are done elsewhere that have been brought back to manual because they're points where there's a lot of failure. So certain little things that were automated, you've found you get less failure or no failure if you get some human intervention at certain points too. So I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I guess that comes from it's not unique, but we do give a 25-year warranty for our panels, and we're doing that as an Australian company with an Australian owner under Australian law. I think that's kind of carries a little bit more weight than a warranty from an imported panel or an imported product, because there have been some of rumours, or I've heard whispers of sometimes where people have tried to take up a claim and with an external participant, and it's been very difficult. So we know you can drive up to our factory and knock on the door and say, demand to see Glenn Morelli. So there is a real drive for ensuring that whatever we do, whatever we say we're going to do actually happens. There's one or two parts of our process at the moment that we have maintained as manual, but I don't think that means it's always going to be the case, because I think the automation improves. I think it can be just a case of at the time developing technologies and techniques that are leaving failure points. And so for us right now, though, until we find a solution that we're really happy with, we're going to stick with that human intervention, which so far has served us very well.
So it's a bit like a fast food policy. If you're upset, go to the counter, demand to see the manager, and give them your thoughts.
Absolutely. Well, as a matter of fact,
you heard it here,
get your supervisor. Get your supervisor on the line right now.
Yeah. If you want to be, you would have heard Glenn's vision is to be the most trusted company in the solar industry, or manufacturing company in the solar industry. You know, if you put that out there, you've got to be prepared to take what comes your way and listen and hear it properly. And then sometimes I think trust doesn't mean you're perfect. It means you listen to people when you get it wrong and you do something about it. And I think that's why Tindo's lasted and been successful as it is.
One of the other things that struck me was there was comments on a focus on building solar panels that are going to last rather than chasing the latest watt class or bumping it up and moving it as quickly as you can. A lot of salespeople around the country are always pushing to get the next watt class because on their quotes, they can say it's a better panel because it's got more wattage. But I actually agree with the thoughts that if you're building something well, 5, 10 watts here or there is irrelevant. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, thank you, Luke. I really agree with that. I think there's definitely a need for we have to innovate and continue to improve, you know, to continue to drive efficiency and sustainability for our customers. But I think so if you want to be the newest and the best all the time, it means you've got to accept there's going to be a certain failure rate around that. And that's true for, I don't want to diss any car manufacturers out there, but I never buy the first release of a new model of a car. Always let it sit out there for a couple of years. They've got to iron all their bugs out, and then you buy it when it's been out for a couple of years. So you're never the newest guy on the block, but then there's a portion of the population that always want to have the very first thing as soon as they've got it because they're passionate about it. So what we tend to do is we have a roadmap or a plan for where we want to go with our products, and we spend a lot of time searching for the best possible componentry to make that come true. So that means for us, we're not far off releasing an N-type product. I don't want to give any dates here because I've got a shed full of P-types to get rid of.
By the 1st of October.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that we're certainly not the first at the table, but we believe that the product we release in that class will be as good as everything else we've done as well.
So, Richard, getting towards the end of the podcast now, we always ask our guests how they deal with stress in their personal life and what they do for a hobby. How do you manage your stress, and how does your family deal with you running such an enormous organisation?
I do like to exercise a bit, so I can't say I'm a runner, but I do like to trot every so often. I do find that when I do that, it gives me a chance to decompress, but also I have amazing epiphanies when I'm out, when I'm right at the desk and just sort of having to breathe hard. One thing I love to do, and I do it with a bunch of mates once a year, is we go for a long hike, and we did the overland track a couple of years ago. We're looking at doing the South Coast track in Tasmania, which is like a 7 or 8 day hike, completely off grid with no access. If something goes wrong, you're getting a helicopter out of there. So it's an expensive sprain if you got one of those. And I really look forward to that. So I have to do a little bit of training to be fit enough to do that. And so that's probably my stress decompressor. I think the other thing too is there's nothing better than having good mates around you that have known you for a long time, and my network's all around the country. So we've sort of come together, if you like, and you cannot see someone for a while and just you're back to where you were when you were sort of 18 or 19. It's awesome. And my family, I think they're just very patient. I try to leave it at the door, but there are days when you come home and you've got to get it off your chest. And my wife is very, very patient. Love her very much.
So week away with the boys on the piss in the middle of nowhere gets the job done for you.
Yeah, that's exactly. You've got to be careful what you actually take. So I don't mind a wee dram of scotch actually, but that's what I usually drink them on the track. Yeah, it's great.
And you've got to carry this stuff for a whole week. You've got to carry your supplies with you.
Yeah, so beer's sort of out of the question because it's just too heavy. You can't carry enough of it. Gets me through.
I'm guessing Carl would need a support vehicle to bring the beer.
Yeah. I've got the wheels are turning, Luke. I'm thinking a silver pillow that's been drained out of the wine and filled up with scotch. It's dead that way. It's nice and low weight. And you can still carry good volumes.
Yeah, and a pillow once you're done.
Yeah, perfect. Has two uses, hasn't it, all the way through the trip.
Now, just before we wrap up, I might go around to everyone if you've got any last comments or questions, and I think we'll start with Nige.
Yeah, I've got two to throw in. Thanks, Richard. Really interesting, and congratulations on where you're up to. And, can't wait for the announcement on the Gigaplant. Two quick ones. First, a huge shout-out to all the support people out there. I am playing an increasing role in working with the support team at Solar Analytics, and one of the things I had to do this week was go through the training deck that they have, and I think I lost count at 5,000 pages. It was mind-blowing. The complexity of the systems, the front-end systems, the back-end systems, the admin, let alone actually knowing the product and, you know, sorting problems out for people and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they're the unsung heroes. They're locked away on computers and just, you know, jammed in corners in far-flung places all over the country and the world. So big shout out to all the support people who work really, really hard and you know, the unsung heroes. They don't get to drink scotch at conferences or gin with ants, in your case, Richard, I think, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, sure.
So big shout out to all the support people. Secondly, Fully Charged is on next weekend in New South Wales. If it's anything like the show last year, it's going to be a huge show. EVs are continuing to grow nicely in Australia. I think the Fully Charged guys will put on a great show if last year's anything to go by. So, you know, if you happen to be in Sydney, I think it's 8th, 9th and 10th or 9th, 10th, 11th, something like that in Sydney. Well worth going along to.
It's next Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's it.
And I'll be there, Nigel. All I've got to finish up with, Luke, is that I agree with Richard, getting out into the great outdoors and doing a walk. I fixed my bike, which hasn't been ridden for 6 months. I had an absolute blast, even though it scared the crap out of me. I don't quite know how Nigel feels on his electric bike, given that he's got 20 times more power than I do. But get out there and enjoy what's left of summer. That doesn't apply to you, of course, Luke. You've got another couple of weeks of 45 degree days.
Another month or two. No, very good, mate. A huge thanks to Richard Pedersen from Tindo Solar. Mate, it's been great to have you on to learn more about what you guys are up to and about yourself. Do you have any last comments you'd like to put in there?
Just thank you guys a lot. This is a great podcast. It's fantastic to be part of an industry that's just so innovative and is here for a real purpose, has a real meaning. You know, we're improving the planet and we're improving people's lives and the way they live and the cost of their living. So for me, it's just, I couldn't be in a better place. So I'm very grateful to be here and thanks for having me on.
Thanks again, mate. And to all of you listeners, really appreciate you listening. If you can subscribe, like episodes and share them, just helps us get out, get more listeners, and it helps all the algorithms put us near the top. So appreciate you listening, your support, your feedback. That's always welcome. And we'll catch you next time.